Okay, good afternoon. This will be a guided meditation, and my understanding is we'll be able to do this at the beginning of every class. So first I wanted to just say make a few brief comments. One is that meditation isn't particularly a religion. So if you have a different religion and you are wondering how this fits in, it's totally complementary. It's really working with your mind. That's what it is. And it's really getting more familiar with your own mind. And it is, of course, based out of Buddhist tradition and Indian tradition, but there's so many other religions that incorporate some aspect of contemplation or meditation. So the instruction I'll be giving is called shamatha meditation, which means peaceful abiding. And there are, within Buddhism, that's my home base is Tibetan Buddhism, many different forms of meditation within Buddhism, and many different lineages, just as there are many Protestant faiths, there are many different Buddhist lineages. But this particular technique is one that's quite common to all the Buddhist lineages. So it's really the most basic and fundamental. So to begin, the first thing is posture. And we're sitting in chairs that are not actually recommended for meditation, but this is what we have. So that's fine. We'll just work with what we have. But at home, it would be good to have a chair that's that you don't feel like you're slanting or falling down in. Or you could, if you're flexible enough, sit on a cushion on the floor. But it shouldn't be like a couch cushion or something like that. It should be firm enough so that you have good support. And there are also meditation benches. You can put your knees back. So there are a variety of things. And you can work with whatever works best for you. But it's fine to meditate in a chair, not sitting on a couch or a soft chair, but something more like a dining room chair. So this instruction will be as if you were sitting in a chair. So within meditation, the technique, there are three parts to the technique. One has to do with body. One has to do with breath. And the third has to do with mind, working with your mind. So to begin with body, if you were sitting in a chair, you would want to sit upright in the chair with your 2 feet planted on the floor and just straight ahead. And if it's comfortable enough for you, not to lean into the back of the chair, but just to use your own support, that would be recommended. That's extremely hard in the chairs that we're using right now, so if you need to lean back, that's fine. They slant. So an upright posture is very important, and it's as if there were a string suspending you from the ceiling. It would be like your vertebrae would be like a stack of gold coins. So there's a sense of alignment right from the top, and also keeping in mind that we have natural curves in our body, so we're not trying to flatten our back or do anything unusual or exaggerate any curves, but just basically working with the natural shape of our body, but remembering that it's an upright posture. And that's very important. Your hands, if you're sitting on the floor and you want to check, you can drop your hands. And even here, you can try to drop. And then just place your hands right on your thighs. Very simple, very comfortable. Nothing fancy here. So there's a sense of being grounded, and I find I meditate on a cushion on the floor, and I find myself feeling more grounded when I'm lower to the floor, but it's really up to you, whatever works. The second part of the instruction has to do with the object of meditation. And different traditions have different objects of meditation, but the one that's common to all of them is working with the breath. So that's what's recommended in terms of beginning. In terms of working with the breath, we can work with, basically, I'd like to use the instruction that Sogyal Rinpoche gives. And that is, the breath just comes in naturally. And then as you go out with the breath, there's a sense of just breathing out and letting go on the out-breath. So there's a sense of just relaxing and letting go, and the breath comes in again naturally, and the breath goes out. In this technique, as Sogyal Rinpoche mentioned, our eyes are open, and the gaze can be in front, like 4 to 6 feet, with the eyes lowered down. So you're not particularly looking at anything, and you're not fixed on anything. There's a sense of relaxation and just letting your eyes rest. The reason the eyes are open, it's more of a sense of being present in the world and not trying to shut something else off, but being present with what's there right now in the moment. So let's just take a minute to feel our posture. And in this technique, the mouth can be open, slightly open. So just let the breath come in on its own. And when you breathe out, just follow the breath out. And you'll notice that there's a little gap at the end of the out-breath. Just notice that. And the breath comes in on its own. The third part of the technique, of the instruction, has to do with thoughts. And even in this very short time of just noticing your breath, you may have noticed some thoughts were coming up. Thoughts aren't a problem, which is very good news, because we think. This is what we do as human beings. We think. So we're not trying to get rid of the thoughts, and there's no sense of aggression towards the thoughts. But thoughts are like the waves on the ocean. The waves just arise out of the ocean and then they fall back down. So in the same way, when we notice we're thinking, we can label that thinking and just come right back to the breath. or we don't even have to label it. We can just notice and come back. So the discipline here is not to be carried away by the thoughts. We may go off even for 10, 15 minutes perhaps, but the discipline is to come back. And we can sometimes notice that we can make a choice. Well, that's a juicy story. I'd really like to follow that. But the discipline is to come back. So over and over again, we keep returning to our breath over and over. No matter how long your session is, if you plan to sit for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is, the intention is always the same. Just notice the thought and come back. Notice the thought and come back. This particular instruction of the breath, I think, is actually one that goes very well with the work that we're doing with the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. Because what's really happening there, in a way, is there is actually a gap. There's a bardo happening. When we breathe and we breathe out, there's a space or a gap. And if we didn't breathe in, we wouldn't exist. So it's actually working with that sense of letting go and dissolving into a much bigger space. So I think it's a very appropriate technique for what we're working with here. So why don't we just do it for a minute, and then if you have any questions, we can discuss it. Ding. I forgot my gong. That worked, didn't it?
That worked well.
Should I record the questions? Or
sure.
Is that okay? Would that be all right?
It's fine.
Is that okay with people?
Anybody have a problem with recording the questions?
Okay. So feel free if you have a question.
All right. This is my big wonder. Anytime I've ever been introduced to meditation, it was always for a relaxation technique. And this talks more about bringing the mind home and releasing everything that you have on your mind. Are you supposed to be thinking of some things in your... What is it that you would be thinking of that you didn't already know in your mind as you're going about your daily business?
Well, although, we don't want to have any false advertising here. So meditation isn't really that relaxing. It's not a meditation of just relaxing. It's about notice. Actually, the whole point of meditation is to be present in the moment. It's about being present. And what we're doing is noticing how much we're never present. We're either thinking about the future or we're thinking about the past. So when every time you notice yourself thinking and you come back to the breath, you're coming back to the present moment. And the power of the technique is to bring you back over and over again to the present moment. So the intention isn't to process something or to try to get rid of all your thoughts or to try to relax. Does that make sense?
Well, it's answering some definite questions because I'm very fearful of anything that has to do with a hospital or shots or anything like that and having major operations. This is what I went to a person for.
Mm-hmm.
And they did meditation, but it wasn't what you're talking about at all. It was more to just try to relax my mind about some upcoming event.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would be directed towards some outcome, and that would be very different from what we're talking about here. So it sounds like that was a technique that was being applied to help you in that situation, and so that would be very focused on that particular outcome. And that could be called meditation, but that's not, I mean, there's probably a lot of different ways people use that word. But in terms of what Sogyal Rinpoche is talking about, he's talking about bringing the mind home. And what is home? Home is right here, right now, the present moment. That's how he's using meditation. And that's the instruction that I gave. So I could see why it would be confusing.
Yeah. And what does that mean right now? Mm-hmm. You don't want to be anywhere else but in the absolute present. Is that it?
Well, it's not about wanting to be anywhere else or trying anything. It's just about being. So it's noticing when we say, I'm going to meditate for 10 minutes and you have a space in your bedroom and whatever, and maybe you have a candle or something that's meaningful to you or maybe not. Doesn't even matter. You don't need anything. You just need the proper seat and the space. Then your intention is just to work with the technique and to bring your mind back to the breath. And the breath is a very good object of meditation because when we breathe, we're breathing in the present moment. We can't breathe for the future and we can't breathe for the past. We can only breathe in the present. So the breath is very powerful, and that's why it's a really good object of meditation. So the point of it then would be just to set aside some time every day, if you're able to do that, and just try it and see what it's like for you and see, does your mind wander and can you bring it back to the present moment, to the breath? It's very simple. It sounds so easy, but it's
well,
not.
We're talking about studying for so many years, and I'm thinking, so much to it, and is that their whole life, the studying of this?
Well, there is a tremendous amount. There are many, many teachings in Buddhism. They study the mind. So if you think about the Eskimos and all the words for snow, it's the Tibetans have lots of words for mind and emotions and how we get hooked in the world and how we get tangled up in whatever it is. Like, they study all this. They have a way of looking at the world in a certain way. And there are many, many teachings. So this is one of thousands of teachings, obviously. So there is an aspect to Buddhism that has to do with study, which is very profound and there's a lot involved there, and with meditation. And there are many different meditation techniques. So this particular technique is, the word I used was shamatha, S-H-A-M-A-T-H-A, shamatha. S-H-A-M-A-T-H-A, shamatha, which means peaceful peacefully abiding or peaceful abiding.
Perhaps what Cindy was talking about was more of a relaxation response.
Right.
That, you know, was referred to John Kabat-Zinn, and they have done studies at Harvard, how the mind and the body work together, and one could use this technique, calling it meditation,
relaxation.
What happens is your mind and body work together, and having been a nurse, I can understand how that might help people, because I have seen it help people, and it has helped myself. I did the Lavaz method for childbirth, which is you know, and you breathe, you use the breath, so on. So, perhaps it's just the question of what you're calling it. There's different techniques. So in medicine, there would be different techniques. Different techniques for meditation.
And also the John Kabat-Zinn program, which I took 2 years ago, actually, mindfulness-based stress reduction. So you lie on the floor and you do a body scan. So that is a form of meditation as well, because your mind... If you're, you know, you start at your left big toe, and if you're asleep by your, you know, your knee, or your mind is gone into, you know, I'd like an ice cream cone or whatever, then your mind is no longer with your body. So it's a very good training technique. That's another method. I mean, there are many methods of training in terms of working with meditation. So
I
that's also meditation.
You get some side effects that you didn't expect because you go into meditation just to be there.
Right.
In the moment. And
right.
You could have, you know, if it's been written that there are physical manifestations of the effect of the meditation on the body. Just recently I read it in my the magazine in the School of Medicine actually documented that.
Oh, yes. They're really doing a lot of research on that
now.
So I just want to check in. I knew you had a question, then.
Yeah,
I want you to have
I'll
a chance
something.
To... Okay.
No, I was just...
okay, go ahead.
As I mentioned, the relaxation response and the medicine stuff, that's where I began to do some meditation, and but I did my eyes closed all the time, and to me it's much harder with my eyes open. So when I read that, I didn't know one had ever mentioned eyes open, so I tried it after I read it, but I found I was visually... I was much more distracted. I have a pattern that works for me with my eyes closed.
Yes.
So I'm trying to decide in my mind and what works for you. Well, this suggestion.
Well, you know, I guess, you know, I think you just have to experiment for yourself. Mm-hmm. There's no one right way, and you have to see what works for you. I find if I close my eyes, I tend to be lost in thought much more easily. Something about having the eyes open keeps me more present in the room. There are other techniques with the eyes closed where you're actually, you know, more aware of what's going on inside your body. They're different styles of meditation that way. So, you know, there's no one right way in terms of the particular technique. But it's interesting that his particular technique was the way I was first instructed. Everything he said was how I was instructed. So it was very easy for me to teach from that point of view. So that's why I just used what was there.
And you can
Liz?
I've been working with this for about 10 days. In the past, I've tried to establish a meditation practice, and I found that I tried really hard. And I enjoyed reading Zogyal Rinpoche's instruction about letting it be easy and letting it just happen. It's like, okay, well, so I'm trying that, and it's very interesting, but I can't say that I have any sense of spaciousness or bliss. I just sort of do it for 15 minutes and the little thing goes beep, 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 okay, I did it. And it doesn't feel particularly different or anything, but I do notice that I'm less distracted as the day goes on. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting to me. And I guess one question I had was, do you have any suggestions as far as how long to practice this?
That's a good question, and when, too. So it's really up to you in terms of that. It's recommended, and he says it in here, too, it's better to do short sessions more frequently than try to do a one long session and be present and kind of stay with it. So I think, 10 minutes is a good way to start. And if you're a morning person and you can do it first thing in the morning, I think that's great. If you're a night person and you feel more awake at night and less disturbed in terms of phone calls or whatever, then you could do it at night or whenever it's best for you, really. It's up to you. And you can try 10 minutes. The main thing is that you know that you set your intention before you begin. So you know, I'm going to set aside 10 minutes and I'm going to do this, and you turn your phone off and you know that this is your time. And you can experiment and do it longer if that works for you. But really knowing your intention, and this is, you have a clock or a timer or something so that, you know when it's over. That's important, I think. So, yes.
Is it really necessary to time it? My feeling about it is that when you kind of feel that you would like to come out of the meditation,
mm-hmm.
that you would, I think to me it would be very distracting to set a timer. I've never done that.
Well, that's fine too. It's just that sometimes people feel like, oh well, I've had enough. I'm getting out of here. You know, like they intended to sit 15 minutes, and so they just jump up. I mean, it's amazing how many things you can think of you have to do right now. So it's a way to just say, to set a boundary, but not everyone needs that.
And I think you can set an intention without necessarily a timer.
Right.
So when I did meditation, I would say, I have 20 minutes, and that's what I would do. And I was amazed at how often my eyes would open in 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was like, and I never set a timer.
Yeah.
It's like there was a part of me that was really aware of the passage of time. And then 20 minutes, if I only had 15 minutes in a day, I'd say, well, I'm rushed, maybe just 15 minutes, and then I'd open my eyes after 15 minutes. I mean, I was amazed. I don't know how it happened, but it always happened.
Yeah. So that's really...
There's a way of being aware of things outside of ourselves.
Yeah.
Do you get cold with meditation? When I first was learning meditation, I was told, and it seems to be true for me, that if you really kind of get in the zone, whatever, your body temperature drops.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't had
that experience.
It does when you sleep. Your body temp drops when you sleep, so it might be the fact that you.
I was hoping I wasn't sleeping, but I couldn't.
I'm not sure, but it's important, to be comfortable.
There's a wonderful book. It was called Present Moment, Wonderful Moment, and it's by Thich Nhat Hanh.
Oh, yes, I know him,
Vietnamese monk. Mm-hmm. But it's all about living in the present as you go through your daily routine mm-hmm. of life. And it's one of the segments in it is called, when you're doing the dishes, you're doing the dishes.
Yes.
You know, instead of, it's kind of like meditating all day long. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to do, though, because you don't be doing the dishes, you're thinking about, well, what am I going to wear tomorrow? What am I going to have for supper? But if you're really focusing in on the task at hand, it's, you're really, really, really living in the present. And it's a very hard thing to do, mm-hmm. because I've been doing the dishes, and I'm saying, I'm doing the dishes. but it's really a way, I guess if you keep doing it long mm-hmm. enough, then it becomes a way of just really bringing yourself into the present.
Mm-hmm. That's
because
a great
we're always
point.
Worried about what's happening, next or what happened before, and we never really kind of zero into the present. And I think that's one of the things they were kind of talking about in this book is mm-hmm. to really focus in on what you're doing while mm-hmm. you're doing it. It's not easy.
No.
It takes a tremendous amount of practice.
That's meditation in action.
Yeah.
And
it
is. And the point of sitting meditation, taking that time is to start to train your mind so that when it's practice. So what's it practice for? It's practice to be awake in the world. So by actually, I'm glad you brought that example up about the dishes because I was thinking about it the other day. It's like, okay, you go, yay, it's time to wash the dishes. I'm going to be present. I mean, you can really rejoice in that activity and really be with it. It's great training. Absolutely.
It really is. It's a wonderful book because he calls them gathas, but I guess it's another word for poem.
Oh, I see.
And he has all these little 3 or 4 line poems that you can say while you're doing these particular tasks. Like if you're in your garden, he has one about your garden, and there's another one about doing the dishes, and another one about, I forget, other different things. I'll bring it in next week and take a look at it. But it's an interesting book, and it's a really good way to kind of get yourself into that present moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, is that when it's practice for other things in our life. But one of the things I wanted to say is I recently read a book because we were setting goals, and it says that in order to form a habit, you need to do something for 30 days about the same time. And if you miss a day, then you have to go back and count it as day one. And so after 30 days, then it becomes a habit. So if you're doing the meditating and you get used to feeling the signals, like I know when I need to be home or start dinner. I don't know the time, but I just know that it's sometime between 6 and 6:30. So I think that our body has this internal way of knowing, but it needs to have repetition in order to set the clocks of your system. And this is from a book called The Magic Lamp, which is all about setting goals and meeting those goals. And so, again, in Priestess Path 2, we had to set 3 goals, and then we had to set action plans. And we needed to have a morning, or we need to have a ritual, and we picked a time to do it. It didn't necessarily mean place, but a time to do it. And it was an interesting, and now I have some patterns in my life that take me 2-3 minutes, but they're patterns because I did it every day. And it doesn't even come as, oh, now I have to do this. No, it's just something I do, like brushing your teeth. And I can't tell you how I can't go to bed without brushing my teeth because I've set that pattern. It just doesn't feel right. I'm laying there and going, you know, I'm up. So I just wanted to. And I think a lot of things also, what I have experienced is a lot of things happen in my body and in my mind that I don't know. And all of a sudden it's there. Like, I heard you speak about this book, and I was going to talk about being in the moment in regards to that's what meditation, according to this book, is getting you used to. Because I find myself, like you with the dishes, being a whole lot of other places. But I can't be a whole lot of other places when I'm driving. So I know that I need to food shop. I don't start making my list while I'm driving because then I'm not as attentive as I should be. So I'm in the moment when I drive. I am really all about driving. So, but with dishes, I'm all over the place. Because for me, my hands know what to do. I don't have to have them. But I can see the benefit of, you know, having my mind and body just enjoying the process.
On the other hand, though, I always call doing the ironing idiot work because you can be busy with your hands and your mind could be traveling or going somewhere and you can have a wonderful experience. That's really the opposite.
That's right.
And did they have a mantra with this particular one?
No, this technique does not have a mantra.
Right. But it did say in the book, that eventually you might want to combine and do all 3 of the different practices that were mentioned, breath and mantra, and I don't even remember what the second
thing. An object.
Oh, the object of meditation. Yeah. So sometimes there's a technique where you could just focus on a stone or something in front of you and just hold your attention on that, basically. So that becomes your object of meditation.
Rather than the breath.
The breath is said to be a really good one to start with because it's not solid. So there's sort of a natural dissolve when we breathe out. If we breathe out and then you just sort of are dissolving. I often use the image with my meditation students of standing by the ocean and you see the waves come in and you see a wave and then it dissolves back into the ocean. And in a way, that's what your breath is like. So it's a natural way of being present. The breath is a natural way of being in the present moment.
And it also deals with death. I mean, if that's the
yes,
thing, because
yes.
You know, the wave disappears. And
yes,
it's gone.
Yes, yes, exactly. It's not there anymore.
It's not there anymore, and then
right.
And something else replaces. Doesn't replace it, but something else comes
arises
and then
from the
else
space.
Disappears.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's perfect because. I mean, this is what he's talking about of the passage of each life as we, you know, arise and dissolve back.
And the water's still there.
The water's mm-hmm. still there, yeah.
Yeah. That's
what does
beautiful.
That relate to the emptiness they talk about? Nothing is permanent.
Yes.
I mean, the ocean
yes.
is still there, but it's coming and it's
but
going.
The wave isn't permanent.
The wave,
wave
is impermanent.
That particular.
Yeah, the wave. Yeah. Sorry, you're
right.
Right.
The wave.
Yeah. Yeah. So that
yes.
shows that the impermanence.
That's also, I mean, I think that's why using the breath as a way to start with meditation is really good. Or start, end, continue, forever. I mean, it's very powerful. So the second one, the object of meditation is another way of training your mind. And the mantra often accompanies visualization practices and other practices. So that's, and maybe other traditions use that more. Any more questions? Okay, I'll turn this off then.
Thank you.
You're welcome.